Today's podcast is brought to you by LootCrate.com. Save 10% on any new subscription at trylootcrate.com/picturelock. Enter promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings. You're listening to WERA LP Arlington 96.7 FM. Welcome to another episode of the world famous award winning Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, filmmaker, film festival director, film critic, and lover of film and TV. You can find all the back episodes and so much more at picturelockshow.com. Just a reminder to you filmmakers that are listening that the Rosebud Film Festival is currently in its call for entries early bird submission period until tomorrow. So you definitely want to head over to our Film Freeway page to make sure that you get your film in. You can find out more info at rosebudfestival.org, but let me just say, a film festival that gives away $5,000 cash prizes is a festival to submit to. While Rosebud has been previously open exclusively to DC, Maryland, and Virginia residents, it is now open to the rest of the world, and the world is really submitting, which is awesome. But DMV listeners, don't worry. We've earmarked one of the grand prizes for best DMV film in honor of our prior tradition. We're still looking for unusual, innovative, experimental, and deeply personal films, so submit ASAP. All right, on today's show, I'm talking with Picture Lock contributor Ryan Boera. I wanted to make sure I introduce him to the Picture Lock audience as the man behind the reviews. We talk about his recent time at American University, and he'll give us his thoughts on Victoria and Abdul, which is out in theaters this weekend. I've also been sitting on a bunch of DC Black Film Festival interviews, and shame on me, there aren't enough Kevins to cut and edit the show in the whirlwind that can be my life sometimes. So I wasn't able to get these out ahead of the festival. So you're going to hear me speak about the festival in future tense, but it has passed. But better late than never. I apologize to the filmmakers. I definitely wanted to get these interviews out earlier, but I wasn't able to. So you're going to hear them now. You're going to hear from Antonio Hernandez about his web series Garnish, Eli L. about his film The Cracked Mask, which if you missed that DCBFF, it will actually be playing at the Real Independent Film Festival in October. And finally, I'll talk with Tarek Davis of Page One. And that's all ahead on Picture Lock.
Hey, this is Tim Gordon, founder of thefilmgordon.com, and you listening to my man, Sam, Kevin Sam, on Picture Lock Radio.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and on the line with me, finally, I'm able to have one of Picture Lock's contributors. This guy is pretty good and handy when it comes to writing these reviews. I love his style. He's a recent graduate of the School of Communication at American University. His name is Ryan Boera. Ryan, welcome to Picture Lock, finally.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. The audience hasn't actually heard from you yet, but they have definitely seen your writing and some of the reviews that you've done over the past less than a year. But definitely want to say thank you over the airwaves for your contribution to Picture Lock. I think you do a fabulous job. But the first question I always start out with is, when did you first fall in love with film?
Ooh, starting off with the difficult questions. That's a tough one. I always loved films for, you know, visual reasons. I like as sort of visual spectacles. I always grew up in an artistic family, so, and I had this kind of eye for not only cinema, but, you know, all mediums. And, but I don't think it was until college when I switched over from a journalism track to a film track that I started to appreciate the craft of making a movie, or, you know, making a piece of video art. So yeah, I would say my love for cinema is a long one. but has definitely taken a sharp turn in recent years and kind of blossomed into this, into a career, so to speak.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I always love origin stories because it kind of helps me to appreciate the person that I'm talking to, but then also for an audience that might be listening, might be inspired as well in terms of choosing their career path. So one of the questions I have, kind of following up on what you just said, is, you know, what was it that kind of convinced you to go from like the journalism aspect, as you said, into the actual business of and making film? Because you also minored in business entertainment. So I'm just kind of wondering what sparked that for you?
Well, I would say the first step I had into this film community was through editing. And I always liked the idea of cutting something up and changing it a little bit. So, you know, there's always that adage, you know, there's the film that you write, the film that you make, and the film that you edit. And each one's different. And that editor gets, you know, the kind of a, not necessarily a final say, but gets to add, you know, his or her spin at the end to kind of retell the story that's being told. And so I always liked that kind of, you know, liberating freedom as an editor. And so I took a took an editing class back in my first year of college, and I think that really led me to this, to the decision that, you know, hey, maybe this is something to look into.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with recent graduate from American University and cinematographer Ryan Bowera. Ryan, I noticed, and you got to go ahead and please plug your website for the folks that might be looking for a freelance cinematographer. But I noticed you've worked with a bunch of different types of cameras. And so one of the things that I love and I respect in terms of cinematography, I'm no cinematographer, but I realize the importance of having, as I like to say, the person that paints light, to be someone that really enjoys what they're doing. And you've worked with a lot of different cameras. What is it that you enjoy, like you kind of said, but just in terms of painting the frame, in terms of the colors that, you know, you use, the colors that you don't use, shaping light within a frame?
Right. This may be a bit of a cop-out answer, but as far as cameras go, I was fortunate enough to work with film. I made a short film while I was doing a study abroad trip in Prague, and I would say the Ariflex, the 16mm, just gave us so much room to kind of explore these colors and kind of you know, it kind of like opened up this world that had been this gaping void that has been missing in my life. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I've been definitely fortunate and blessed to have worked with not only so many cameras, but so many different people. Cause most of these cameras aren't mine. And I've had the, you know, the unique pleasure of working with some great cinematographers in the area that have, you know, helped kind of guide that path for me.
It's pretty awesome. So, you know, again, guys, you can go to ryanbowera.com if you're looking for a freelance editor or a cinematographer. He has his links to his reel and all that good stuff up there. But I guess one of the things that I'm wondering, in terms of the D.C. area, you know, what have you found exciting to work on? Because, you know, DC is definitely like a documentary heavy place, but what are some of the things that you've really enjoyed working on in the DC area?
Well, there's a lot of creative minds here and a lot of people who have ties to different parts of the world, so I would say my favorite part is working. I've worked on a few short documentaries that were filmed primarily in like the Latin America regions. Mm. But as an editor, I have the luxury to kind of edit remotely. You know, I don't have to go to South America to edit. The footage can be brought back to DC. So I've worked on a few stuff here. But that's kind of the beauty of DC, right? We're a melting pot. We're a giant group of individuals who have feet in a lot of different doors and in a lot of different places. And so, we're a stone's throw from anywhere we want to go. And a lot of people who work for nonprofit organizations and work for these global organizations, bring a lot of footage back to DC. And so I've worked on a few, documentary shorts, three in the past 2 years that have just been a ton of fun to work on.
Sweet. So, film criticism is kind of, I guess, what brought you to Picture Lock in the first place. And I've said to you on multiple occasions, I just love your writing style. And partly is because what I see within your writing style is someone that really loves and appreciate film. And, we're kindred spirit on that. But on your blog, you actually go kind of more in depth on different films, such as you have one that's Sound Composition and A Serious Man. And you really kind of dig deep into the sound composition and within the film. Just out of curiosity, what is it about analyzing film as a critic that really excites you?
Well, with the sound composition for A Serious Man, I mean, that I often say that when I walk out of the movie, the kind of critique writes itself. I don't really have to do much. I have these opinions and these foresights and these insights, but the filmmakers, the people, the creative souls who are making these bodies of work are doing so with an intention. And so A Serious Man, for instance, the Coen brothers made this unbelievable film. If you haven't seen it, I'm going to plug that film for you. That's an awesome piece of work. And I remember watching that and just being totally drawn into the sound. There's so many great parts of that movie, the lighting, the angles, the story itself is just totally nuts. But the sound just kind of jumped out to me. And so, of course, that's what I had to write about. And with film critiquing in general, I would say that, there's just always something to talk about. There's so many different facets. I mean, most of these film critiques are pretty short and concise because I don't want to bore anybody. But you could honestly go on for hours about each individual shot, each individual scene. You could talk about just one character and their progression or evolution as a person in the film. But typically, I tend to approach my critiques through a story lens or a production lens, because that's where I come from as a person who majored in the production side of film.
Right, exactly. And again, that's why I say we're kind of kindred spirits. For me, also attending American University for grad school, it's one of those things where I really feel like it's really cool that, like, not only can we analyze the film, but because we know what it takes to actually set up a shot, the writing a screenplay, and all the different things that actually goes into it, I think we are able to appreciate it even more versus, like, the person that is just a film enthusiast, because like, how hard you actually have to work to get that shot. How hard it is to make sure that, as a director, your actor is giving you what you need. Because it's not just, oh, could you be more sad? that's not great direction. The direction is you've been without a father for 20 years, and for the first time, you're reconnecting. It goes a lot more deeper than just be more sad. But I think that's what makes it so fun. To read your critiques. But I guess, like, This kind of makes me just thinking about this. Who were some of your like influences in terms of film criticism, or did you have any prior to going into school?
I've definitely read my fair share of reviews, but I also try to, with my reviews, kind of keep my vantage point not necessarily personal, but unique, in that I'm not really pulling from anybody else. I'm not technically inspired necessarily by anybody else. But I also think, you know, to that end, there's a kind of, yeah, I guess uniqueness to film criticism, is that there's this community where everyone gets to throw their opinions at a wall and, you know, see what painting we come up with. So,
right.
So, you know, it's like a Jackson Pollock. So I to be honest, I didn't do much film criticism before coming to you. I mean, I love to write. I love to talk about films, but I don't have any criticism inspiration.
Were you like an English major before then or something?
What's that?
Were you an English major or something like that before?
No, I just love to write. I did some poetry slam competitions. I wrote some poetry, and I've written a few screenplays. I've written a few specs for television, some pilots. So I'm constantly writing all different kinds of formats, but you know, this is just another way to flex those writing muscles.
Flexing them, indeed.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Picture Lock. I'm talking with the guy that doesn't mind throwing his paint on the wall and seeing what sticks. Speaking from a film critic, Ryan Bowera. So yeah, Ryan, that's really interesting because, you know, I'm always, like I said, I'm interested in origin stories. I'm interested in how, you know, people become who they are, which is, again, why probably we love film, because all of it is basically a character study. We're looking at life and we're able to put it on the big screen. And so I find that fascinating that you weren't doing too much writing or whatever beforehand. I know for me personally, you know, Roger Ebert, Siskel and Ebert before Ebert and Roper. But I used to watch that, and I didn't realize at the time, like, wow, I was really falling in love with cinema and all that kind of stuff and that influence. But then, like, looking back at it later, it's like, oh yeah, it's like always been there. And so it's interesting because I think you hit the nail on the head that you have to have a unique voice, because in this day and age, like, everyone has a paintbrush and everyone has an opinion if they have a Twitter account or a cell phone or, you know, a Facebook account. So it's definitely about, you know, making sure that your voice is unique, and it doesn't necessarily have to stand out. It just has to be consistently you, and people will gravitate to that, or they won't. But at least, like you said, you're being you. So as you are being you, out this weekend, this Friday, hitting theaters, that would be today as this airs, Victoria and Abdul. You were recently able to go and check that out for Picture Lock. And can you give us your thoughts on the film?
Sure thing, yeah. So for those who haven't read anything about it or seen any of the trailers, the film follows this Indian servant, Abdul Karim, who arrives to England for Queen Victoria's Golden Grand Jubilee. It's this biographical drama, which is what they dub it as, which I find kind of funny. I can talk about it in a second. And so this servant's, you know, his responsibility is to come present this gift to the queen. He can't make eye contact with her. He can't look at her, but his, you know, his disobedience to those rules kind of allows for the relationship to unfold, right? You know, he kind of wedges himself into this very unlikely relationship, and even though, well, much to the dismay of all of the royal family. You know, the class divide was very, very present, very, very relevant back in the 1800s. So the whole idea of the story was to follow this relationship, how it evolved, how it came to be. And it's funny because it's a biographical drama, is what they say, based on real events. Opening credits come up and it reads, based on real events, .. mostly. Right? So from the opening frame, they're giving the audience the opportunity to laugh. Right? This is gonna be, you know, this movie's gonna ebb and flow between comedy and drama.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm still with you. But as we go along, you know, these comedic moments that present themselves, I find more laughable than comedic, right? So I'm laughing not necessarily at the joke they're trying to tell, but at the fact that it's just kind of so not funny, in my opinion. So in that sense, I think the approach and the purpose to the film fell a little flat in my book. I was thinking perhaps that issue may have been resolved if, you know, the movie Victoria and Abdul was made into a documentary. What I found super compelling about the film was that, well, not about the film, but about the story, was that it took these people after the death of Victoria and after the death of Abdul. It took researchers and devotees and people who were fascinated by, you know, Her Majesty's story. It took them over 100 years to find any evidence of the relationship because the family was so appalled that the relationship existed in the first place. And I thought, that's your story right there. It took them so long. Like, who was the guy who stumbled upon, like, the hidden note or the, you know, the painting, I believe, is what they found in one of her summer homes. You know, who found that painting? Who is that guy? Like, why did it take so long? Who are the people that burned all of the evidence? I thought that was, you know, a far more interesting story to tell. I mean, without giving too much away, it gets good right at the end. I mean, the whole like, the last few minutes, I'm like, okay, can the movie start right here? It was so gripping. I mean, I know there was a bunch of places we had to go before we got to that moment of sincerity and clarity and emotion, but I just felt that, I just felt that the approach, like the comedic approach to this biograph, this mostly true story, was a little strange. I do say all of this with a little grain of salt because Stephen Frears, the director of the film, is one who some of his older work is stuff that I really, really like. High Fidelity, The Queen, Philomena, some of the other stuff that he's been a part of, these projects have been great, really, really good. So I can't ignore the fact that I like this guy, but there was some stuff that just really didn't work for me. I mean, story alone, was just strange. I didn't feel like there was any character development. I mean, Ali Fazal, the actor who played Abdul Karim, did a great job, serviceable job, but the screenplay didn't allow for him to kind of change as a character. There was no arc. You know, we learn in film school about character arc and evolution and kind of ups and downs and characters kind of paving the way for themselves through a mountain of conflict. And there just didn't seem to be any for him. And so he stays just, you know, flatlined the entire film. And so you don't really feel connected to him. And he's the main character.
yeah.
So I found that kind of strange. I mean, Judi Dench was terrific. You know, the likeness to Queen Victoria was just absolutely incredible. And then, I mean, while we're on the subject of cast, Adil Akhtar, who played one of the other Indian servants. He was also in The Big Sick, which I did a critique for earlier in the summer. He was unbelievable. My favorite scene was with him, and he did put a smile on my face. He did actually make me laugh. You know, his comedic moments were in fact funny. So there were some redeeming qualities.
So overall, if you had to give it a rating, what would that be?
Oh, man. You know, the student becomes a teacher. Gosh, I got to get paid. I would say C. I would say, yeah, C minus. It's one of those movies that I wasn't going in expecting the world, and I left not being wowed. So I was like stuck in this middle of, you were like really close to making a good movie, and it was reminiscent of it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, if you're going to the theaters this weekend, and this seems more like an art house film, but if you're looking for that, Ryan Bowera gives Victoria and Abdul a C minus. You can actually go to pictureshowshow.com/new-releases right now to read his actual review of the film. But yeah, it seems, you know, in my book, a C minus means A. You know, you can wait till it comes out on Netflix. You can skip it. It might be worth seeing, but you know.
Yeah, the subtext of the grade. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, well, cool, man. Well, again, this is Picture Lock. I've been talking with Ryan Bowera. He is a freelance editor as well as cinematographer and contributor to Picture Lock. Ryan, I just wanted to, again, thank you for your contribution to the site, as well as thank you for coming on today. If you could, let folks know how they can find out more about Ryan Bowera.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Again, I mean, thank you for the plug on the website. You can find me on the website. You can email me at rbowera@gmail.com, or you can just go on and check out my writing, because that's a pretty good representation of what I am doing. And again, thanks for having me on. It's been a ton of fun.
Awesome, man. It's my pleasure. We got to have you come on again. So thanks again.
Definitely.
Let's take a quick break for promos. Stay tuned. Thanks so much for listening to Picture Lock Podcast, guys. I'm always trying to find great deals on cool things that I can offer you, as you know. And with Picture Lock, Loot Crate is offering an opportunity to save 10% on any new subscription at lootcrate.com. Well, what is Loot Crate, you ask? Loot Crate is a monthly mystery crate for geeks, gamers, and fans of pop culture, delivering cool and often exclusive items like collectibles, t-shirts, home goods, and more directly to your door every month. What makes Loot Crate so awesome to me is, instead of getting my new graphic tees from the store each month, for the same price or less, I can get cool apparel from my favorite TV shows, movies, games, and more. And if you got a little more to shell out, you can get even bigger and better items. No matter what you pay per month, the value of the crate is usually more, so it's a win-win. You're going to search through the rack or shelves anyway. Let Loot Crate do it for you and throw a little curveball in there for you. To save 10% on any new subscription, go to trylootcrate.com/picturelock. Again, that's trylootcrate.com/picturelock to save 10% on any new subscription. Enter promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings. All right, and we're back. Quick reminder, the following interviews were recorded ahead of this year's DC Black Film Festival, and I had way too much to do. I couldn't get them out in time. So I talk about it playing at DC BFF in the future, but it's already screened. So again, my apologies to the filmmakers, but I still wanted to give them some airtime and make sure this hit the radio airwaves. Enjoy. Appreciate you guys tuning in to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and my next guest is no stranger to the show. I mean, I've talked to him on this radio station before. I've talked to him on the red carpet of DC Web Fest. Antonio Hernandez, the director of Garnish, welcome back to Picture Lock.
Yeah, what's up, man? How you doing? Thanks for having me again.
It's my pleasure, man. So, you know, folks, you can check the back episodes if you want to know how he fell in love with film. But just for the audience in terms of that might just be tuning in, let's get a little history lesson just in terms of how you kind of got started in the industry.
Basically, I kind of got started in college. I never really studied film, but just by chance, I took a class called Visual Anthropology at Towson University. And I was kind of just getting into photography at the time, and I was using DSLR, the 60D, which is a camera I still use now, and ended up doing a student project that won like the class's end of the year film festival, and I did a couple more things, small projects here and there, and I kind of left it alone for a while. Then last year I picked it back up and I started Garnish. That was an extension basically of my blog. And I wanted to do a visual representation of the kinds of people that I was interviewing and the kinds of things I was seeing, the places I was going to, the shows, the concerts I was attending, and things like that.
So, you know, we've talked about Garnish before, and it's really cool to see now it's coming through the DC Black Film Festival, and it'll be playing during our district film block, and that film block is going to be showcasing films that are about DC or from DC filmmakers. So it's really cool to kind of see that it's coming through. If you could go ahead and let the audience know a little bit about the specific episode that that will be shown.
Yeah, so overall, Garnish is generally just it's a documentary series that explores culture, causes, and creatives through a sociocultural lens. The episode that was selected for the DC Black Film Festival was about Glowing Theory. It was a concert series that ran at the Black Cat in DC. It ran from November through May, and so there were 5 or 6 concerts altogether, and each one featured a lineup of all Black women, DJs, performers, including rappers, singers, producers, and also Black women were part of the visual representation and doing the graphic design and the promo work and everything like that. And so I documented 2 of them, and I did interviews with some of the artists who performed, and they talked a little bit about their experience as performing artists, but also, their experience as women in the industry, as Black women in the industry, and kind of that, some of the kind of the struggles or the obstacles that are in their way, that kind of affect their career and things that I don't think get talked about a lot because it's still such a male-dominated industry.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with the director of Garnish, Antonio Hernandez. So talk a little bit more about that, Antonio, just in terms of, I think it's really interesting because honestly, I remember one of the judges had Snapchatted me a freeze frame of one of the artists. I think she had like cat eyes or whatever while she was watching. And so you have these unique women that like you really don't necessarily hear from every day. So talk a little bit about capturing their story.
Yeah. So in addition to just documenting that, I was also part of the team that was helping promote it. So Jamal Gray, who's a curator and artist himself, along with Cheyenne Freeman, those two brought in other people kind of from the creative community to help kind of promote it, to help with like logistics, getting the word out, and stuff like that. And for a bunch of the artists, a lot of them I have heard before and I've met before. So for the most part, it wasn't my first time hearing them, seeing them, or even talking to them. And so I think that helped. I think you're talking about Suge Savage. He had like, the contacts on.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So part of it was that it was filmed all in the Black Cat, actually. So that scene with her, that interview with her, and the same interview with Cleo Napster was actually filmed in the upstairs bathroom at Black Cat. which is interesting. Because I had, I had that bright kind of like Pepto-Bismol pink ball, and it just like went really well because I think they both happened to be wearing just like all pink. And I think at first glance, I've showed it to other people, and they're like, you know, they were kind of intimidated or put off by the context. But if you just listen to her, it's probably not what you expect. And I think that goes along with it too, is that, you know, that people expect a certain thing from women artists, from Black women artists. They expect them to act a certain way, to sound a certain way. And I think a lot of it is that people will surprise you. Especially, another good example, I think, is with a DJ, Jessie Cunt. And she goes into a little bit of how she came up with her name. And there, you know, there's really good reasons for it and why they do the things that you do and how they express themselves, which I think is really interesting. And I think it's important to have that perspective from their own voice.
Yeah, most definitely, man. I think, you know, like, you can never judge a book by its cover. And I think, in the same way, like what you said is, you know, visually you might be like, wow, you know, like what in the world? In terms of the intelligence and, the way that they communicate, the women that, you know, you interview just communicate, man, it's stunning. And I think that's a great thing that you're able to really communicate with the audience through the web series, just in terms of how these artists, and I think even one of them said, like, I forget what her name was, but she was just saying how, like, she's just going to be herself, and how freeing that is. And I think that it's really cool that, you know, you just took the time to showcase these women.
Yeah, I think that was probably Suge Savage, too, who said that. And she talked about it in the interview too, but she said just being herself, no matter what, and it's not just one kind of just freeze frame. It's kind of like an evolution of, you know, maybe different hairstyles, different choices of music, different ways to perform, different style and things like that. So it's never still, it's always constantly moving. And I think it's really helpful for people to see that and hear that.
Right. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with the director of Garnish, Antonio Hernandez. All right, Antonio, so if you could, as we kind of wrap this up here, you know, where's Garnish going now? And then how can people, you know, reach out to you and find Garnish online?
So where I'm at right now is that I completed episode 15, Loop Dreams, which is about a party that a friend of mine throws in Baltimore, DJ Cho Natured, who focuses on booking LGBTQ DJs. I'm also in the midst of editing episodes 16 and 17, and I'm going to start working on the feature link film too. So there's a lot that I have that didn't make the episodes because of continuity, time, and things like that. So I'm working right now to kind of just combine a lot of the music episodes and incorporate some that didn't make the actual episodes into one kind of feature film that kind of talks a little bit about just overall broadly what's going on in the DC and Baltimore areas as far as the music and art scene. But for now, you can go to www.watchgarnish.com, and you can see episodes 1 through 12 from last year, and also get the information on events I'm holding, events I've held. And you can follow me on Twitter at electric_llama. That's llama with two L's, L-L-A-M-A. And I have another Twitter just for Garnish. It's at watchgarnish.
All right. Well, folks, again, you can check out episode 14 of Garnish at the DC Black Film Festival playing next weekend. Antonio Hernandez, director of Garnish, appreciate you coming back on Picture Lock.
Yeah, appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me again.
Hi, this is Nell Minow from MovieMom.com, and you're listening to Picture Lock.
Thanks for tuning in to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and my next guest is the writer-director of The Cracked Mask, Mr. Eli L., no stranger to Picture Lock. Eli, welcome back to Picture Lock.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot for having me.
Man, come on. My energy level is so high. I got to get you, like, excited as well. There we go. All right, so listen, you know, you're friend of the show, but it's actually been a while. It might be like first season of Picture Lock. So I'm gonna go ahead and hit you with the first question I always start out with, just you know, jog people's memory. When did you first fall in love with film?
Oh wow. First falling in love with film probably came as a result of my passion for acting, really. I never thought I would get behind the scenes of it because I thought it was like maybe too intricate, but it's a different feeling to see something that you kind of created from the ground up become this whole production. You know, and I hope I get back with a friend of mine, but, you know, it's just a different feel.
Man, I totally can understand and relate to that. You know, I started out, as I always say, acting like in high school. And then it was really because I felt like, man, acting is so hard to crack into it. Let me go behind the camera. And so you definitely, it's like a different... It's a different vibe and feel because you go from being a part of the machine to kind of like actually being the machine, especially in independent film.
Definitely. Definitely. There's a whole lot of moving parts behind the scenes. It's much, much, it's a much easier on the other side when you only have to worry about one thing. And that's actually kind of hard going back and forth between acting and doing filmmaking because you find yourself in front of the camera thinking about, is that the right angle? Is this where I should be? You know, you have to take yourself out of that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that, man. Give us a little history lesson in terms of how you got started in the industry. And I'm kind of also interested in, like, your move from being an actor to actually being behind the camera. Because I thought it was interesting when your film came in this year for the DC Black Film Festival, because I'm so used to you being the actor that I was like, whoa, check him out. He's the Eli L's doing his thing.
Well, I mean, actually, you know, it's kind of like people pull me in this direction, you know. I mean, I was always willing to help, you know, others, you know, try to get things or see things differently from another angle and things like that. I've always been able to write and things like that, but I'm lazy. I'm more of a big picture type of person, you know. I can see how it should be and I can kind of drill down a little bit more into like what I think best and what's not, that doesn't kind of resonate. So, I mean, having someone to work with that knows that is always important because the co-writer on this, Jay McKee, but she actually brung the script to me originally and we kind of looked at it and I kind of like, she said I turned her, she said I told her she had an ugly baby and turned it into something else. But that's really not the case. But to your question though, I just wanted to be able to, I haven't stopped acting. I mean, so I haven't made like a straight transition from getting in front of the camera to behind the camera. I just have a lot more, breadth of experience now, like that. And like I said, sometimes they can be to your detriment if you're trying to, you know, you're still acting and you're not always behind the camera. Because, like I said, you can lose yourself in those two worlds because, like I said, there's a whole lot of moving parts behind the camera where that if you're in front of the camera, you can focus on your character, you're only your character, and you know, get the most out of that. So it's just, you know, it's just a game that you play. It's a balancing act between the two. But, I mean, I love it. I mean, no other feeling than having something you create from the beginning and then see it to the end. It's a different feel than just being one character in front of the camera.
Right, most definitely. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm talking with the writer-director of The Cracked Mask, Eli L. The film will be playing at the DC Black Film Festival this year. So, Eli, if you could, go ahead and let's get into the film. The Cracked Mask, what is it all about?
Well, it's about the struggle of a family and how they deal with, you know, a tragic situation that happened within their family. And you get to see, like, this event play out from the perspective of the person creating that, who created that whole issue themselves. A lot of times you don't normally get to see that type of perspective. And it's one of those films that kind of, you know, you kind of like, once you finish watching, like, what happened? You know, it's just like, and I don't know if that's good or bad, you know, I don't know if people want to see it again, or they like, or they just be like, I don't know what happened. So, can somebody explain to me, you know, that type of thing. You don't want to leave the audience like that, but at the same time, you do want to, you know, I don't like to make my audience lazy. I give them a lot more credit than I think a lot of filmmakers and writers do, because I think that people have vivid imaginations and they can kind of carry themselves through. So I try not to point out everything, but at the same time, I do want them to understand, like, the story that's going on. And I think it's a good message. Well, it's a different message, and I think it's one that just needs to be talked about more in our community.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's like you said, it's a fine line between, you know, just leaving the audience where they're, like, clueless as to what's going on, and then leaving that door cracked a little where they can draw their own conclusions. And that's a lot of times the fun in film, when, you know, you can kind of walk away from a film and you talk about it. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, like I said, I try not to, you know, dumb down my audience, but at the same time, I don't, you know, necessarily show everything that I probably could have. And that's the thing with film, too. You also go, as soon as you finish filming, as soon as you're in post-production, you're like, oh, why did I do that? Oh, why did I do that? Oh, I should have did that. I should have did this. I think that's with anything. So, you know. It's the funny thing about film, you kind of outgrow it as you're doing it, if you're making progress, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, as a DC area filmmaker, kind of wrapping things up here, you definitely have some familiar faces to the DMV acting community. If you could talk a little bit about your actors as well.
Well, when I always have people in mind, I think whenever people write, they think of people who could actually play the roles and bring them justice or whatever. So one of the main staples, well, the guy does a lot of work. I don't know if he does a lot of work in DC area, but he's from this area, Malachi Malik. I mean, I know he's a strong actor, and he's done a couple of productions that I've been a part of. Also, Tamika Chavis, I mean, she's a face of DC as far as a working actress is concerned. She's commercial, she's theater, she's film, she's everything, you know. And then you have some new faces out there. Actually, my son is in it, and he's Ronald Benson Hill Jr., then you have Kitty Grayson, you know, those core four family members. And then, of course, there's a mix of different artists and actors in there. But, you know, I try to bring that core family in and try to make it, you know, a cohesive unit, at least to work together, at least for a short, you know. But like I said, there's a whole lot of things that they bring to the table that, you know, of course you don't see in the beginning, but at the same time, you're glad that they did that.
Most definitely. You're listening to Pixrock. I'm talking with the director and writer of The Crack Mass, Mr. Eli L. So, Eli, how could people reach out, find you on social media?
You know, I'm kind of like developing that aspect of my brand. But I'm also I'm on Facebook as Eli L. I'm on Twitter as at Eli L 365. Which is weird because I never do any Twitter or anything like that. I have an Instagram, but you know what? I don't even remember what it is because I never post anything. But mostly I can reach on Facebook at Eli L.
Nice. Well, The Crack Mass, once again, is playing at the DC Black Film Festival next weekend. So you definitely want to come out and show your love for a local DC area filmmaker. Eli L, I really appreciate you coming on Picture Lock.
Hey, man, I really appreciate you having me, and thanks a lot for letting us show our film in your festival. I appreciate it a lot.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. And, man, on the line with me, I have writer-actor of Page One, Tariq Davis. Tariq, what's going on, man? Welcome to Picture Lock.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I am doing well. Man, all right, so... first question I always start out with is, when did you first fall in love with film?
I first fell in love with film, my earliest memory. My parents took me to a drive-in I must have been 2 or 3 years old to see a movie called Blue Thunder, starring Roy Scheider. And I think that came out in 81, 82. So I remember seeing it and seeing, being at the drive-in, seeing this movie that was larger than life, not understanding what it was about, but just like I fell in love with the moving image from that point on. The sound of the film coming into the car, filling up the car, looking into the driveway, the parking lot, and seeing all these other cars and all these people enjoying the experience. And I wanted to be in films and be a part of that from that moment on.
Man, that's a really cool, unique way of falling in love with film, too. I mean, just in terms of, like, driving, I don't get to hear that story too often.
Yeah, I don't. I realize how lucky I was to have the parents I did. They were huge movie fans, and they didn't. And a lot of my friends, like, are shocked by this. My parents didn't, like, guard me from films. If it was too graphic, of course they wouldn't let me see it, but most films, they let me watch alongside them, and the only rule was if I didn't get something, I'd have to ask questions.
Wow, I like it. Your parents sound like how I am with my kids now. Like, bless my parents, they definitely, you know, allowed us to see movies and stuff, but they weren't like film buffs or, you know, whatever, like I am. So like with me, I definitely can relate to your parents. I'm like, man, when can they see Star Wars? Like, you know, my oldest is 5. Is she not scared anymore of Darth Vader? Cause I'm going to play it for her.
Right. And, I think that's important. Letting, cause kids are really smart and letting them process things for themselves. Like, you know, it's up to every individual parent, but, you know, when they get to figure out and process things themselves, like, I think they come out on the other end of that. Like, I think it's a really cool thing when they come out and, like, oh, I'm not scared of Darth Vader. That's a really cool accomplishment for a child.
Most definitely. All right, so let's get a little history lesson. Could you tell us just kind of how you got started in the industry?
Oh, wow. Well, I've been...
I never heard anybody say, wow, right?
Yeah, no, you asked me that, and I just realized how long I've been doing this. I started auditioning when I graduated high school in 97. And I got my first professional acting gig maybe in 99. So I've been doing this around 20 years or close to it.
Wow, man, I can see why you say, wow, that's all right.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm knocking on wood right now.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm talking with the writer and actor of the film Page One, which will be playing at the DC Black Film Festival next week, Tariq Davis. So I guess let's go ahead and talk about Page One. Page One is one, in which I saw it come through Film Freeway. And as the director of the festival, you know, I'm not doing any of the judging, but like, I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And I was like, man, this thing has to get in here. And again, it got in on its own merits. And I was like, yes, I thought so. The thing is hilarious. It's well told. So just tell the audience a little bit about it.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you. So Page One has been a movie I've actually, it's part of a full feature I've been working on for the past 10 years. The basic premise is, you know, we all know the trope or the joke about the first person that dies in horror films and how that's always a black guy.
Right.
And so the premise of Page One is, what if that guy was an actor, was one actor, and that's the only role he can get is being the first guy killed in every horror film. And then one day that actor finds himself on a movie set where a horror movie actually truly unfolds. And because he's been killed so many different ways, so many different times, he's able to stay ahead of the trope and stay alive and hopefully keep other people alive too.
So can you talk a little bit about, just in terms of like, landing those different jokes, right? Because I think it takes a good balance of, like, you don't want to, like, over-explain your point, but, like, it just comes in so naturally, and I'm cracking up. So how do you accomplish that?
Oh, well, that's, thank you. That's, I think a lot of that was, I want to give a large amount of credit to my collaborators, specifically my buddy and director, Don P. Hooper. And on set, Don, we discussed this, and we discussed, like, well, we didn't want to make it super jokey. We wanted, the most important thing for us was that the threat or the horror in the situation felt genuine. And if that was true, then the humor that came out of that would be true as well.
Mm.
The humor would be honest. These people would be, you know, we'd be reacting honestly. And that was our goal. So all the jokes, and, you know, comes out of the tension and hopefully comes out of, like, these honest moments of just, like, if you're really in a hard situation, you're really going to say some, you know, if we're removed from it, you're going to think about those things as being pretty funny. You know, like, what's going on? What's this thing over here? What's happening right here? Like, once you remove yourself from the situation, but in it, you want to be as honest as possible. And so that's what we were going for.
You're listening to Picture Lock. This is Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with the writer and actor of Page One, Terry Davis. Man, this, like you said, I think that you guys definitely nailed that balance, and I really enjoyed it. One quick question before we kind of wrap things out. The cinematography, like, one of the things that I love about certain films is just the look and feel of black skin. And I think the way that you shot it, it really looks great. So if you could just shout out to the cinematographer.
Yeah, Tyler Ribble was our cinematographer. And, yeah, that was another goal of ours. Like, a lot of my complexion is different from the actress Dorcas Davis, who's amazing in the film. We have two different complexions than our co-stars, who are both white. And so we wanted to make sure that everything blended well. And Don worked with Tyler, and Tyler Ribble did a great job. And my hat's off to all of them.
Yeah, most definitely. And so, folks, again, Page One is going to be closing out the festival on our closing night next Saturday. And I think it's going to be, I think everybody's going to love it. I mean, I think it's such a great note to end on as we go into the, you know, Making Black Lives Matter Through Film panel. And so, folks, you definitely have to come on out to check it out. All right. So, Tariq, how can people see more of the film or reach you guys on social media?
We're going to have a New York screening where we're doing the festival run right now. And so, the DC Black Film Festival, I think, will be our first premiere of that.
Yeah,
I think you guys are the first. So, I'm super excited about that. And the best way to find out about more about the film is to follow myself on Twitter. My name is Tariq R. Davis, so that's Tariq R. Davis. You can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, or on Facebook at just Tariq Davis. And we're posting, you can find our Facebook page, Page One, and we're posting updates all the time, letting people know we're going to have a New York screening out here because we're based in New York. And then we're going to drop it, once we're done with the festival run, we're going to drop it online for the general public.
All right, you've been listening to Picture Lock, and I've been butchering Tariq's name the whole time. Appreciate your...
it's all right.
No, that's all right, man. My bad. All right, man. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's all for this episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Ryan Barrera, Antonio Hernandez, Eli L., and Tariq Davis for coming on the show. Be sure to check out picturelockshow.com. For what to see at the movies this weekend. You can find Picture Lock on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, Pinterest, and Periscope. All social media is at Picture Lock Show. Watch back episodes of the TV show at youtube.com/pictureloxshow. You can download the podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio, and other places podcasts are downloaded. Feel free to give the show a hearty review if you're enjoying it. I really appreciate those reviews. It only helps to get Picture Lock out there even more. Don't forget to check out the website, picturelockshow.com, for movie reviews, news, and to subscribe to our newsletter to get a chance to win tickets for movie screenings in the DMV. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, you can fill out the form on the website and drop me a line if you're enjoying the show as well at picturelockshow@gmail.com. All music is done by Mike S. The Prophet 13. You may have noticed a few new tunes underneath this episode. My brother is killing it right now. Thanks, bro. I'm Kevin Sampson, and until next time, I hope you stay locked on film.